Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Rev Midnight Live Now, a production brought to you by GeorgeWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you discussions and interviews with figures in the world of entertainment and general pop culture. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Midnight Live Now.
Good evening to all my disembodied spirits floating out there in the night air, all you phantasms, you haints, you witches, and you boogers. This is the Reverend, the maniacal minister of the occult, the devil you know, here for another sermon on the Midnight Black Mass. Back after a two-week layoff, we appreciate you coming back to join us tonight after the break. Last time we were here, we had Canadian Scream Queen Leslie Donaldson on the show. No special guests tonight. We're just going to flow right through it. I got a lot of entertainment in terms of one special guest, but we had such a great response to the geek panel, the super geek panel of the damned, of the compound. We had the team of Muji, and we had Rufus Black of the Devil's Rejects, and they are back here at the compound for the live roundtable discussion that will commence later on in the program, and actually throughout the program we'll be hearing their input as the co-hosts here, the co-captains of this ship, driving us through the foggy, foggy winter night. You just heard Venom with In League with Satan off the 1981 black metal classic, Welcome to Hell. Gotta get the wrestling plugs out of the way. Coming up this Saturday night, that's tomorrow night or tonight, depending on how you set your clock and what time you go to bed. But it will be at NWA Anarchy in Cornelia, Georgia, for national television taping. The Reverend returns to the congregation with the Hate Junkies and NWA Anarchy Heavyweight Champion Azrael. Congratulations to the NWA Heavyweight Champion or Anarchy Champion Azrael are in order as the birth of his son, the newest member of the Reject Army, young Mr. Leonidas, was born. So congratulations to him. He bit the umbilical cord, I'm sure, and all of the appropriate rituals. But regardless, big congrats go out to the Azrael family. I want to talk about NWA Chattanooga coming back there with the Deadly Sin 7 Friday night, March 16th. They got a big card. Going to have the Temptation, Sean Tempers, taking on NWA Chattanooga Scenic City Hall of Famer, Rock and Roll Express tag team legend himself, Ricky Morton, one-on-one. We're also going to have Kyle Matthews. We're going to have Jeff Go Blue returning to take on Brian Casanova and a whole lot more. Jimmy Rave approved signed now to take on Ace Rockwell and his protege Logan Alvey and a whole lot more. Want to be there Friday night, March 16th, Saturdays in middle school for NWA Chattanooga. Go to www.nwachattanooga.com or nwaanarchy.net for more information on those events. And then, of course, each and every Saturday night, and the Rev's there as my busy schedule permits, but in Rossville, Georgia, for Empire Professional Wrestling. And that's a great, great organization going on down there with a lot of up-and-coming young stars. The heavyweight champion of Empire joining us right here tonight, Mr. Rufus Black of the Devil's Rejects. The Rejects have dominated that place with an iron fist, and we're about to close a big chapter there. Coming up on March the 3rd, as we go into tooth and nail for yet another War Games. Many people try to take the Devil's Rejects out. You think you're going to eliminate us in the War Games. You're wrong, punks. You're coming into the Devil's Playground. We know exactly what you're going to try to do. You ain't man enough to come out of that with your soul. Unless you're the Devil's Rejects, of course. We're the masters of that match. We have not lost everyone we've been in. I don't even want to hear that kind of talk. There's alleged hearsay out there that we've lost every War Games we've been in. That wouldn't be the blow off to an angle or anything. But no, I mean, I didn't say that. Like I got me all tongue tied here. Rev talking out of school. We got a whole lot more coming up, fans. We got some music news. We're going to go right to that. Black Sabbath, the legendary Black Sabbath. We've talked about their developments over the last few months. Bill Ward has now left the reunion as quick as it started. Tony Iommi, unfortunately, being diagnosed with cancer. This thing just seems to be ill-fated, unfortunately. Sharon Osbourne of their management has indicated that they are going to be playing at least one show in the United States this year. Next year, after the album releases, hopefully a full tour. But at least one show this year. I'm sure it won't be anywhere near the motherfucking South, but that's okay. Iron Maiden and Alice Cooper going on tour this summer. Going to be a huge summer tour. Probably the biggest one. You know, everybody looks forward to the big summer tour every year. Bonnaroo is a big thing, not really my scene. But, you know, we went to see Scorpions a couple of years ago on the big summer tour. Got to see Poison and Motley Crue last year. This year at the very same place, the old Lakewood Amphitheater, was at High Five Eyes Amphitheater now in Atlanta, Georgia. We'll be back there in June. And you won't see this guy missing Iron Maiden and Alice Cooper in June. You can't beat that shit. March the 17th, coming up, Head Cat will be released. What the fuck is a Head Cat, you say? Well, that is a rockabilly project fronted by legendary metal icon Lemmy Kilmister of Motorhead, who, as if you followed Lemmy's career, you know that he was heavily influenced by the likes of Little Richard and Chuck Berry. And so he's a huge fan of the rockabilly music. It'll be very interesting to hear his spin on it. I think the closest, you know, aside from like some of the covers they did on the first Motorhead album, it'd be like, you know, he did that cover of Chuck Berry's Run, Run, Rudolph for that Metal Christmas album a couple of years ago. It was pretty cool to hear Lemmy just, you know, jamming out on the low-key three-chord rock because he was really putting some soul into it. It was pretty awesome. Run, run, Rudolph! Exactly. Absolutely. March 17th, Lemmy's Hellcat, or Headcat, rather, will be playing live at the Roxy in West Hollywood, California. So if you're out there on the West Coast, I know we do have a few listeners out there, why don't you head on out and pay the old metal icon Lemmy a visit and check out his rockabilly project. Another big summer tour is going to be Rob Zombie and Megadeth. Rob Zombie, and I hate to say it because I don't want to limit him from ever being a guest on here, I know being that his management and I are in pretty good terms, but I got to be a journalist here, I suppose. I love Rob Zombie, but I'm not really thrilled about seeing him live, only because he just don't, like, it's mostly show, you know, and, like, his show would be great, but, like, you know, he just doesn't carry it vocally live at all. I mean, and it's not like his stuff requires a lot, but he just don't have much wind anymore. But, you know, stage show is awesome, and he's a great frontman, and I'm sure it'd be a good show, but, you know, you gotta spend the money wisely on these expensive summer concerts, so my pick's going to be The Coop and Iron Maiden, but certainly not one to miss if you're into Rob Zombie and Megadeth. I got to see Megadeth just a couple of years ago on the Rust in Peace anniversary tour, and they still had all the chops, sounded like $1 million. Absolutely awesome live experience. This week in metal history, in 1978, the legendary German rockers Scorpions released their album Taken by Force. This week in metal history, here on the Midnight Black Mass. Going to try to bring more of that to you as we progress here in the week. So I try to look back at specific anniversaries and dates, but we've got some more tunes coming up for you. Going to go to a band right now who started out of Canada, and they really lumped in unfairly, I think, with a lot of the fluffier glam bands because of their front man was a pretty boy in Sebastian Bach. You know, he's very very flamboyant, and the women like him. He's got a pretty face. So people automatically assume that Skid Row wasn't about shit, that they were, you know, they were these punk-ass little glam fluff boys. But I tell you, I challenge you, if you thought Skid Row was lame and you passed them over, I want you to go back to the early 90s, late 80s. You want to get the first self-titled album, which is a little more bubblegummy, but still heavy as hell. And then, more specifically, the album we're about to play a cutoff of, 1991, Slave to the Motherfucking Grind, because that is Skid Row at their finest. Like Judas Priest evolved to something else, you know. It really, to me, ain't nothing about fluff and glam. That is some of the ballsiest hard rock, and the pipes on Sebastian Bach, the guitar tone, the drum sound. Not enough great I can say about that album. Rufus, before we play this cut, you want to comment? I know you're a big Skid Row fan like myself. I know this is a particular favorite album of yours.
Yeah, I love Slave to the Grind. Definitely one of my favorites. But I have to go back and say something about the Rob Zombie issue.
Sure.
I think he has John 5 on guitar. Am I wrong? I think he does. That's a good show.
Yeah.
That's going to be a good show. But obviously Maiden's the pick, especially living in the Southeast where they never, ever come. So that'll be cool.
Yeah, I don't think I've gotten to see Iron Maiden. I mean, I haven't gotten to see Iron Maiden ever. Like, this is a legendary thing because I've seen 1 million concerts, but never got to see the legendary Maiden because, as you said, they don't ever come around here. I mean, I've been trying to catch Iron Maiden since I was a fucking pimple-faced teenager, and they still ain't come nowhere around here. So it's fucking incredible. They're going to be in Atlanta. It's a pretty high-dollar ticket from what I've seen, but, I mean, it's absolutely worth it. And Alice Cooper, like Alice Cooper is a huge influence on me personally, like from, you know, his mannerisms, a lot of the Reverend took a little bit from Alice Cooper, you know, and the music is there. You know, people say that Cooper's off stage show, but I think he's a tremendous songwriter in his day. Different from the original band musically, like, you know, he's kept his career going and that's great. But, you know, live, he's going to be playing everything you want to hear. And he's going to be putting on a stage show that's going to blow your mind. So you want to get out and see the Coop. But right now, fans, back to Skid Row. We were talking about it. Now you're going to hear it. This is Mud Kicker off Slave to the Grind from 1991 on the Midnight Black Mass.
Bending into evil. Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Go like that.
30 days in the hole.
Yeah, nice.
30 days in the hole. 30 days in the hole.
Oh, yeah.
And we are back here on the Midnight Black Mass. You heard Skid Row's Mud Kicker off of the 1991 classic album Slave to the Grind, and you heard off of the legendary album Peace of Mind, the Iron Maiden Flight of the Icarus. And again, going to be checking out Iron Maiden on the big summer concert series tour with Alice Cooper this summer. Be sure to check their website at ironmaiden.com for the official tour dates in your neck of the woods. We're going in June to High Five Buys Amphitheater in Atlanta. Come down there and party with the Rejects like only we can do it. Right now, fans, it's time for that special point in the show that you all like to enjoy. We like to call it the Moody Movie Minute. And we are here live at the compound with another live edition of the Muji Movie Minute. Notice I don't sing the intro anymore. That's because I found out we have a delay. So unfortunately, the Rev cannot grace the audience with my docile tones when I want to sing along with cool parts of songs I like because of the delay here on Blog Talk Radio. So this is a minor bitch. But regardless, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show the illustrious, the one and only, the great Muji Grant for the Muji Movie Minute.
Hi, it's Muji. This week we're going to talk about Nightmares from 1980. It's an Australian movie. It's directed by somebody you don't know and a bunch of actors that you don't care about. It's the basic premise for the movie. There's this girl who has split personalities, and she decides to, she wants to be an actress. She tries out for this play, and the whole movie is about the production of the play and that everybody just keeps getting killed. It's a pretty hilarious movie. It's a movie that I would certainly recommend just based off all of the really, really funny things that happen in it. It's hilariously bad, but in a really enjoyable way. The first awesome thing is that the soundtrack, the score, is just the most out-of-place thing of all time. They've got music that sounds like it's from Hitchcock movies. It's really fast-paced stuff that they like to play in really slow scenes or people are creeping up on each other. It gets, like, really, really fast-paced. It seems like there's some sort of stock music that they found. And we're like, this will go good. Let's just play this exact same soundbite and everything that happens in the whole movie. There's all sorts of bad stuff like that. Some of the awesome stuff in it is that the killer likes to break mirrors and kill people with broken glass. At one point, she chops a titty, which is hilarious. At another point, she stabs somebody in the ass cheek, and then she also cuts off someone's pecker. So you get really good stuff like that in the movie also.
Yeah, I found it to be, entertaining in the worst possible way. It was pretty terrible, and I was excited because it had the label never before released in America. So, that automatically conjured up the vision in my mind of banned videos, that were of horrendous content, in the best way possible, what I wanted to see. And this was not that. It really wasn't.
Yeah, I think it was banned in America, not because of, the graphic violence and stuff, but just because direct-to-DVD wasn't available back in 1980 like it is now. So they didn't have any sort of outlet to get it to us until now. It's really got some hilarious stuff. At one point in the movie, there's a girl out in an alley who's naked, and she's running from the killer, and she keeps getting stabbed, and she must get stabbed, 15 times. She falls down into the fetal position, and it looks like the scene's over. Then they cut back into inside the theater with these people talking. And it really looks like that he just forgot they had more footage of the girl getting stabbed, because then they cut right back to her running again, just getting stabbed some more. And then they cut back to the theater, and they never go back to, that situation. That's pretty funny. Right off the bat in the movie, you got a guy and a girl doing it with each other, where the girl is, on top in the dude's position, where she's, way too low, and she's, kind of humping him, where the guy would basically have to have the bottom of an umbrella as a penis to actually have been able to have sex with her. That's just some of the small, really hilarious things that happen in the movie. There's a critic in the movie who is referred to as a crippled queen, which is some awesome, hilarious stuff. It's got a lot of hilarity to it. Just to give it the old rating, I would say that it's 20% well done. I think for the just oddities of the hilarious of the boob cutting, the random boob cutting, and the other hilarious stuff in it, it's worth the watch.
Yeah, I do have to elaborate on my favorite scene, actually, which beyond the titty cut and beyond the butt cut and beyond the chopping off the dick, the best scene, in my opinion, was when, and God damn it, I can't even remember the name of the main character, and we just watched this last night, but the chick who looks shockingly like Britney Spears on the cover, but not so much in the movie. She's having a breakdown, and she's having her split personality. Kathy was the evil part of her split personality. I remember that much, and she's having one of these freak out moments and cutting this crazy promo about fucking talking to herself and the voices, and everybody's looking at her, and this other chick just walks up and slaps the shit out of her, and she goes, "You bitch! You fucking bitch!" And there really wasn't much more than that. I guess you had to be there. You can go to Netflix yourself and watch it right now, actually.
And the funniest of it, too, what's hilarious, the girl just seems offended. The one girl's just freaking out, obviously has something wrong with her, and the other girl isn't, trying to, wake her up and get her out of it. She's just, trying to have dinner, so she's like, "Stop the shit," and just slaps her right in the fucking face. It's really, really, really funny. And then, there's too many hilarious parts. Every little bit of it is funny. Everyone's really overacting. Everyone, the kill scenes, they don't actually ever show anybody getting stabbed or stuff. It'll just show somebody doing a robotic stabbing motion. They'll go back to the other person, and all of a sudden they're covered in blood. They'll come back to her, and all of a sudden her piece of glass is covered in blood. There's really too much really funny stuff. You should just watch it because, it's awful, but it's awful in a way that you'll just feel good knowing that that's out there and that somebody paid money for that to happen.
And that's about all I had to say about it as well. Like I said, I loved the hilarious parts. The gore was pretty terribly done. It was not without its charm, though. And a movie that terrible, I'd sit through 50 more versions of Nightmares before one more Shark Night 3D. So, even in 1980 with no budget, that movie had a tinge of heart about it, or, at least a little bit of quirkiness that had... there was something that memorable about it. We're always going to talk about the movie where the titty got cut and the she cut the ass and cut the dick off, and then she got slapped and said, "Yeah, bitch." But, we'll definitely remember that. What are we going to remember about Shark Night 3D other than it fucking blew? So what was the final rating on Nightmares, Moogie? Did it even qualify, or did you... 20%. It was 20%. So I was doing research over here while you were moving it along. Well, there you go. Any final thoughts on the Muji Movie Minute? Anything about next week maybe that we want to look at? Maybe try to redeem our audience with a great. There was a couple there on Netflix that looked like they might have been winners. What do you think?
Yeah, hopefully next week in the lethal lottery of picking these movies, we'll pick one that's better. I mean, we should have known this one had like a 2-star rating on Netflix, which Netflix is the equivalent of Rolling Stone, and that everything is rated 4 or 5 stars. So we should have known it was there.
It's not the way the star rating works for Netflix. It bases the star rating off of things you've already watched, Mooj. So then you should have trusted it even more because Netflix was trying to tell you that it wasn't good and that you wouldn't like it. As it turns out, it was so bad it was good, so you kind of liked it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You should give it a star, then. You should click up the star, give it like a 4-star, and then maybe some more of these entertainingly bad movies might pop up.
Yeah, we've had a run of things that are either really bad or just entertainingly bad. It'd be nice to watch something good. It'd be refreshing to know that there's something out there good that we've never watched.
Yeah, it absolutely would be. I'm not going to lie, but I know that we actually do still have quite a few on the Robert Everett suggestion list, that former show guest and bassist of D.G. Allen and the Carolina Shit Kickers, a great friend of the family here, has helped us out immensely on this show with guests and other things. I actually want to get a big plug for him. Go to themadmonsterparty.com coming up the third Friday and Saturday in March. Big convention. Robert's been heavily involved in lining up a lot of the guests. They're going to have every horror name you could perhaps think of, plus Ace Frehley, and just a wide variety. It's going to be a huge party. You don't want to miss it. Go to themadmonsterparty.com for more details. Actually, one of our former guests, Kevin Helms, who was the stand-in for Pinhead in Hellraiser 3, will be making his first convention appearance there. So you want to check out themadmonsterparty.com. And I think we will go to some of Robert's suggestions perhaps next week if a newer release doesn't find us. That'll be my suggestion. But it's your segment, Muji, so it's all on you. Pick it if you like. And go to a little more Muzak for you. We're going to be coming back with a comic book news roundtable discussion back by popular demand here on the Midnight Black Mass. Right now, say you love Satan because King Diamond is about to tickle your earbuds.
I'm not afraid to die. right to her neck.
And that was the legendary King Diamond off the seminal album Abigail with the classic tune The Family Ghost. If you don't own a copy of that, make sure to go over to iTunes.com or Amazon.com and purchase your copy, because your collection is sincerely naked without it. Now it's time to move along to the comic book news / super geek roundtable. That's right, we're fucking nerds here on the Midnight Black Mass, and we ain't ashamed to admit it. Right here, we had a very compelling discussion, I thought, 2 weeks ago here in this same round table of individuals, and that's what we're going to do again this week. We're going to talk about the news in the comic book business, and we're going to discuss that as true fans. You know me, I made my name in professional wrestling. I ain't got a lick of a snake to do with comic books other than I love them. So this is me espousing my opinion from just a purely place in my heart full of deep love. And the red, black as coal heart here on the Midnight Black Mass. So, big topic of discussion we're going to kick this round table off with in the comic book news of the announcement. We talked about it a little bit last time we were here, but not in great detail. The Watchmen prequels, The Watchmen, legendary, some say untouchable work in the realm of comic books. And now the fans, a lot of this, what I call the fanboys. So like I say, I love comic books. I'm a self-professed nerd, but even some of my fellow fans of the genre tend to crawl my skin a bit with their sandy vaginas, is how I'll state it. My opinion on the DC Comics Watchmen prequels is you're taking a story of the final days of a team of formerly legendary heroes. So now they hire some of the best artists and writers in the business to come and write prequels of when these heroes, who all you got to see was their fall, you get to see their entire glory days, when they were awesome, when they were ruling the roost, when they were kicking ass. And that, to me, is the most compelling part. Muji, your thoughts.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. You know, almost everything that, you know, you really like, it's like a classic tale, you know, you're always happy to have new content for it and everything. Especially that, when you explain it that way, I mean, that's a great way to explain it. You did just get to see them when they were, like, the very end of their run, and all the cool parts, like, of, like, the beginning of the comic and the movie, where you're seeing, like, you know, their brief headlines of back when they're stars, and people loved them, they just briefly touch on that stuff, you know, or go back in backstory. So, yeah, I don't see why anybody wouldn't want to know these stories.
Driven by.
It's called Expanded Universe, and I'm always a fan of Expanded Universe.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this with the Star Wars discussion we had on 2 weeks ago, and that, you know, it is fun to indulge in that Expanded Universe if you're a super fan of it. And that's, you know, kind of where I talked about where I held the prequels. It was more Expanded Universe than, you know, even coming close to touching the originals. But, I mean, that's my opinion. You got writers like J. Michael Straczynski, Darwin Cook, who's also writing and drawing, the same guy that did Justice League, A New Frontier, which is just such a unique book with a great voice, and it become legendary. And you've got people like them. You got Jeff Johns involved. You have legendary people like Len Wein, who were involved in the early DC days in the original storyboarding of Watchmen and such. Like, you know, he wasn't Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons, but he was in the mix. You know, so this is really cool. I'm really excited about it. I think, yeah, in particular, the Rorschach stuff, what Dr. Manhattan was doing, the Minuteman comic that they're releasing, that's just the group comic of all of them together. You know, Silk Spectre, whatever. But like fucking Osmond Dias, whatever, but it'd probably be pretty cool, even though he wasn't my favorite character. You know, there's got to be like some scheming going on there. And of course, the comedians. Is going to be badass because we know he was a ruthless motherfucker. So I'm very much looking forward to the Watchmen prequels, DC Comics. Right here, this core of nerds in this dank, dark, and dungeon is saying that we support the move.
Yeah, I really don't understand just the backlash. I mean, some people are just furious over the fact, I mean, including Alan Moore, of course, but just fans are furious over the fact that how dare they try to, like, add something to the story, and people are just really, really mad. I mean, I say worst-case scenario, you know, I doubt that they're going to be bad, but if they are, then, you know, just ignore them. It's the same way. You don't look back and, you know, if you watch Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, you don't all of a sudden think that Raiders of the Lost Ark sucked. You don't go back and look at the original Star Wars trilogy any less because the new ones aren't as good. You know, they're together, but they're separate. Like any great movie that you love that they made terrible sequels of, it doesn't ruin the original movie. It's a, you know, it's a piece of art all by itself, and then you have these other things that can add to it, you know, if they do. And I think it's silly. I mean, people are just like outcrying or just, I will never read it, you know, and like, I've, you know, it's going to make me not, you know, support DC Comics. How dare they like do something like this? And just the ridiculous comparisons, too, even from, like, Alan Moore, who's obviously bitter, you know, for his own reasons about this and who says that he can't be. But, you know, like, he compares it to Moby Dick, says that why would you go and try to do, like, a prequel or a sequel to Moby Dick, which has been done, and why would you take these classic characters and other forms of, you know, literature, you don't do it, but they do. And he does it all the time. Almost all of his famous characters that he's written since then, a ton of them have been classic characters. Leave a Certain Air Gentleman, his thing with the all the girls from the famous like fantasy tales and stuff. All those things are him taking classic characters and doing something new. And just everything else. I mean, you know, Batman was a pretty cool story in like the 70s. Everybody loved Batman, but stories since then have been like the best ones. So if people would have just not wanted to add anything to his universe, then we've been deprived of, you know, some of the best stories ever. I think people are just being super ridiculous about it.
Like Batman even, like, you know, and we'll talk more about Batman later in TV Casualty, but, you know, Batman is a mythos that has changed so drastically over time. It's almost been a reflection of the culture that was there. If Batman had never evolved, you would not have the Dark Knight in the character and the moral fiber that he has today. For example, in the earliest Batman comics back in the 40s and 50s, he used a gun. And, you know, later that was retconned out that Bruce Wayne would not resort to using a gun because that's what killed his parents, so he becomes a ninja. You know, and these things just have to evolve over time. It's not realistic to expect characters to just consistently stay the same. As long as, you know, they keep the heart and soul of what makes you love them, then that's and I think they'll succeed with this Watchmen. But any final thoughts on the Watchmen prequels before we move on?
People shouldn't cry about it. You don't like it, don't read them.
There you go.
They're going to be cool.
Okay, moving on to some Walking Dead news, more specifically the television show. We've been giving a lot of coverage to Walking Dead. We had one of the stand-ins from that show, Wendy Barlow, also was Fifi the Maid on the show before. And, you know, we've talked about giving a lot of love to Walking Dead. And I got to say, they've been killing it with this second season, especially in the second half. It's been keeping me on the edge of my seat every time. But what I more specifically want to talk about is the announcement that the governor has been cast. And that's a big relief to a lot of Walking Dead fans who are probably afraid that the greatest villain of the entire comic book series would not make an appearance on television, and I just I didn't think that'd be possible, and I'm glad to know I was right. A gentleman by the name of David Morrissey has been cast as the governor for season 3 of The Walking Dead, which tells me when they're done with Herschel's farm here in season 2, something tells me they might just happen to stumble upon a prison. Spoiler alert, if you have not read the comics, but again, if you haven't read those comics, then you're probably listening to the wrong show. We're probably boring the shit out of you right about now. Mochi, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I think it's awesome. It would actually be, from reading the comics, it would be disappointing if, you know, if they weren't bringing the governor in next season because they're in the prison for a really, really, really long time. So they really had to do some filler or just do a totally separate story altogether not to get to the governor. Which begs the question, though, because they had talked about her being cast before, but nothing was ever for sure, is Michonne going to show up before they meet the governor? I think that's a big question.
I think if she doesn't show up before they meet the governor, then I don't think you expect to see her. But that character is so popular, I don't see them not including her. I really don't.
Maybe Daryl first.
Yeah, very well could be. Rufus, any thoughts on the governor being added to the Walking Dead television show and the show in general? Because that's a pretty controversial topic.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, didn't everybody's big theory was that they were going to make, and it looked like they were setting up for it to make Merle, you know, as everybody was saying, who's going to go be the governor? And that's just going to be so lame, it's going to piss me off if it happens. And it's like, I'm glad they're not going to do that. But if they had done it, I would have lived with it, I think. I really enjoyed the show. There's some bad episodes in the first season, this whole second season, I think it's been really good. Some people complain about it dragging on a long time. It's like, or dragging on. It's like, well, we talked about the comic book does it too, like if you read it from issue to issue basis, you're pretty much left even worse off than you are watching the show as far as being dragged on, just do nothing per issue. It's like it takes 3 issues for anything to happen.
Yeah, I mean, but it's good, though. I mean, they try to make it, like, realistic, and they really build the characters, like, really well. I mean, it does drag on even the comic at times, but, they try to keep it as realistic as possible. If there were really zombies everywhere, they keep it as realistic as they can. And, yeah, I mean, they just try to show you everything. I mean, you're not going to be going out, like, having crazy battles with zombies all the time. You would probably be hiding as much as you fucking could. So that's going to lead to just some sitting around talking about life, which happens on the show and in the comic. But it's fine because, when people do go down, and as you've seen in the show, they do, it, makes you care about them a lot more so they're not just, dying for the sake of dying.
Well, and let's not forget that this is a horror show and a horror comic. And with that comes the building of horror. And, I think Kirkman and the comic did a good job of it. They did a good job in the show. Like, while everybody's complaining about this down period, they're being worked. They're the marks. Because, they're complaining because it's down. Well, duh, if it's not down, then it can't get up, So you've got to keep that. Well, so, wow, nothing's happening. Oh, shit, something just scared the fuck out of you,
Yeah, I don't know why people had a problem with this, because I thought the first few episodes of the season were awesome, but I definitely read reviews and stuff online where people were like, oh, they need to hurry up and either find Sophia or move on, because it's, spoiler if you haven't watched it, but, they need to find her, what's going on, it's kind of dragging on, why don't they, do this? And then, the episode, she walks out of the barn as a zombie, it just blows you away, and it's because they didn't just, what are they supposed to do if she gets lost one episode and comes back either dead or alive the next episode, then, what the hell? But they do that so that when big things do happen, it always is like a huge moment. I mean, for like a drama, I can't think of anything that shocked me more or had like a bigger effect on me this year so far than when she walks out of the barn as a zombie and you're like, oh, fuck, she's dead. I can't believe it.
Yeah, no, I think it's weird. I want to know how surprising that was to people that didn't read the comic. Because it was really surprising to me, having read the comic,
yeah.
Spoiler alert, Sophia's still alive in the comic book and is useless. So I was so glad they did away with her. I was like, I didn't really see a lot of like people that I normally see hate on the show, which would be like our friend Ian. He He's been a guest on the show, and everybody's. If you listen to the show, you've heard witness to how lame this guy can be. No, I'm kidding. I love Ian. Ian's one of my main boys.
I can only guess that the news of the Watchmen prequels made him literally boss.
It very well may have. I don't know. It's expanded universe. It's not. You know, the things me and Ian have problems with a lot of times is interpretations of things, reimaginings of things. I hate the Kick-Ass movie, you know, because I think it really butchered a lot of the shit that was in the comic. And I'm sure a lot of people listening to this would probably be like, you fucking idiot, how does it do that? And, you know, I'm like,
I've never read the comic.
So maybe in a different episode some other time I'll get into all my problems with the Kick-Ass interpretation. But in this case, the Watchmen thing, I guess to digress to that real quick, would be, you know, that's expanded universe. That's prequel stuff, you know. So there's really no reason we said it. We're pretty mad about that. What were we talking about? Oh, Sophia being dead, which was cool. Because why not? Why not kill her off? You know, it's like, a lot of people are complaining about some of these characters they don't think are going to pop up on the show. And it's like, you know, it's like they're getting the spots there to serve the purpose of the story. Like, even for me, if Michonne wasn't in it, it's like, that's not, in my opinion, that big of a deal, because it's like, I like Michonne. I thought she was really cool when she came in, but it's when you get past the novelty of she came in and was using a sword, she's not really done shit in the comic book as far as, like, being a big character that's important to anything. She's really just a background character that kills, she's good at killing zombies with her sword. You know what I mean? Like, that's really the most important thing she's done.
When the governor raped the shit out of her, that was a pretty big thing in the comic when they had all of them. They had him captive, and he scares Glenn by raping the shit out of Michonne. Like, that was pretty cool. I mean, I agree. I mean, she's just there, like, as just another hand. Like, she's just she's, like, their number one person in, like, the hand-to-hand battles and stuff. I think she's so popular that people they're probably going to bring her in just due to the fact of that. But there's going to be other characters that they leave out because Daryl is, unless he dies, he's all of them. He's the, like, the tough guy that hangs out with them, and there's just no need to bring in a lot of people that they brought in that plot.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was going to say, is Daryl is like Tyrese, which sucks because everybody loves Tyrese, and somebody made a good point to me the other day that, like, if Daryl is going to be the Tyrese, that they have to start really quick, really soon, working on his relationship with Rick, because, you know, like, Rick and Tyrese in the comic books, I guess more spoilers, but like we said, I'm sure everybody's read this shit. If they haven't, fucking read it. Like, stop being dicks and read it.
Turn this shit off now.
Yeah.
Go read it.
Go read it, you morons. Especially that first compendium. It's just, like, some of the best comic books I've ever read, probably that first compendium. It kind of went a little downhill after that. But, you know, yeah, like, Rick and Tyrese are, like, number one boys. You know, that's, like, they develop a really good relationship, and that is true. And that really hadn't happened with you know, Daryl and Rick yet in the show. So hopefully they'll get into more of that. Especially if they're going to make him the Tyrese character, because I won't tell the spoiler on this, but if they're making him a Tyrese character, then they better fucking start working on that relationship, because they have to be boys, you know, for it to pan out,
matter, yeah.
For it to matter and pan out the way I want it to.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll agree and disagree with you about Michonne or McCone, as some people seem to think it's pronounced. I don't think I've heard a clear one, but I'll go with Michonne, because that's what I always...
McCone's really lame.
That's what I always envision, but no, I think she does serve her purpose as Rick's number one soldier, you know. Like, Andrea, now there seems to, well, I'm not even going to talk about some of that because that's, like, current spoiler stuff that some of you might not even have read. But, like, you know, Andrea's obviously a very important part in Rick's army in the Walking Dead comic. But, like, Michonne is, you know, she's there. She's, like, his muscle. And anytime they talk about, well, what if we just want to fucking overthrow this place and take it from these assholes if they're crazy? Then, you know, Michonne's right there, like, I'm down, let's do it, you know, so.
And just, like, do it on TV, just, like, the cinematic value of if they introduce her the way that they did in the comic, once again, spoiler alert, where she's walking up and has a couple of zombies chained behind her, and she's just walking down the road all chill, and has them on a leash, you know, just to keep people from fucking with her and zombies from fucking with her, like, I remember when I turned, I think that was the cover of her first comic, but or the compendium, so I didn't see it like that, but when you turn to the page and that's that, you're like, holy shit, you know, so I think that if for nothing else but to have that awesome thing in the show, I think they'll probably end up doing it.
Yeah, I mean, she would definitely be a sweet character for the show. I mean, she's a ninja sword wielding you know, black chick, big athletic black chick. You know, that would be a good, there's nothing like that on the show. It would be a good thing to have on the show. And she's another strong woman figure on the show, you know. So
yeah, and especially if they are going to follow the plot, any of the stuff in the comics, you know, there's going to need to be more chicks. I mean, a lot of people are going to get, you know, need that if they do the comics. But, yeah, I mean, there's not really, especially the way that they portrayed them, like, on the show, none of the girls on the show have really been super strong. So it would be cool to have one that's just really awesome from the beginning that isn't trying to kill herself or crying all the time or just nagging Rick all the time. It would be cool to have one that was just, like, a badass. So it would be cool if they brought her on. I mean, I'm pretty sure that they probably will, just because, like I said, I think she's probably the second most popular character, like, overall, having Rick on there.
Yes, I would agree, and hopefully we'll see her on there in the future. Any other thoughts about Walking Dead before we change topics? Okay, next news item, starting tomorrow morning early, 10 o'clock a.m. on the Cartoon Network. DC Comics debuts the DC Nation 2-hour block, an attempt to recapture the vibe of Saturday morning cartoons. That's something I do miss because, you know, I'm not often that we're up on Saturday mornings too early, but, you know, when you flip into the channels, you don't see the things that you used to see on basic because you do have a cartoon channel just dedicated to cartoons. But still, the fact that it's DC Comics, it's going to be Young Justice, which is a phenomenal show. I've gotten high marks across the board. I finally sat down and took in the first half of season one, which is all that's aired to date, and I was just thoroughly impressed. It's a great addition to the DC Animated Universe, and if the show's still around long enough, we'll get to reviewing it in the TV casualty, but I've got a lot more to go through before we get there. It's going to feature Young Justice and the new Green Lantern animated series, which is from the Paul Dini, Bruce Timm team that brought you the original Batman animated series and Superman the animated series, this time though in CG, which is very awesome. Like, the CG is, you know, it's that classic Bruce Timm big chinned animation, but in CGI, like Pixar type graphics, and really impressive with the first episodes they showed around Christmas time. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'll be up bright and early in the morning. Check out the DC Nation. Also going to be featuring a little interstitials with, like, the Teen Titans and Plastic Man, little short 2 to 5 minute cartoons that they're going to just place in there. They'll be covering comic book releases, be covering movie releases. I'm going to have reporters out, you know, in, like, those little different segments. I think it's a very cool idea. Anyone else got any feedback on DC Nation?
I've never seen any of those shows. They all sound really cool. It says come on Cartoon Network?
Yes.
That's neat. It'd be neat to see, like, one of the other channels do something like that, though. You know, it'd be neat to see, like, Fox. Because, you know, Fox and ABC were the two biggest Saturday morning cartoons. It'd be really neat to see them do something like that. I wish they would count on some sort of idea. Maybe they do a Marvel themed Saturday morning, and they could just be a big old rivalry.
ABC, Disney, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, come on.
So, that'd be neato. Sound off, Mooch.
I'm not really a fan of cartoons that much, or the animated stuff, like, in general. I mean, I like some of them, and who the hell doesn't like South Park, but I don't really like cartoons that much, so even if it was good, I probably couldn't tell you, because I still like cartoons.
You're looking at a nerd about so many things.
No, there's no limit. No Limit Nerd Soldiers. Yeah. Hootie motherfucking who.
Well, see you next week.
Moving along, the Marvel Comics, give DC a little plug. Marvel Comics got the big Avengers versus X-Men. We've talked about it. We had Jason Aaron, one of the Marvel architects, here on the show to discuss it. But the time is drawing nigh. That April release date is coming up for number one, and the number zero prelude issue is actually coming out next month. I am super excited for this. You're taking a major event, mostly led to believe that it's going to be the Phoenix Force coming back from what the promotional materials have said. And apparently the way that that's handled between the mutants and the Avengers is going to cause some major shit to hit the fan. It's going to be what Marvel Comics calls their most expensive venture ever. They are spending more money on television, radio, newspaper, media, just all kinds of getting it out there, putting commercials out for Avengers versus X-Men. Not just for the event in and of itself, might I add, but for each individual issue. They're promoting each issue like it's a movie. And I think that's a fucking brilliant. Like, why the hell haven't they, you know, people bitch about comic book sales all the time. Like, why haven't these companies that have these trillions of dollars that they're just sitting on perhaps make a push like this? I mean, DC did it somewhat with the New 52, and it turned out to be hugely financially successful for them. So I only hope the same for Marvel, because, you know, more people buying comics is just better for everybody. I'm really looking forward to that. A lot of unanswered questions, like what side is Wolverine going to pick? You know, like, he's fucking... He just split up with Scott, but, like, has he completely abandoned the mutant philosophy, and is what the government and the Avengers going to want to do, going to jive with what Wolverine's going to do? He's definitely the guy torn in the middle of this whole thing. And just looking at some, they're doing the Avengers versus X-Men versus, which is like a tie-in of just extended fight scenes. Like, all the major fight scenes from the main book, they're going to take and do an individual issue of just that fight. And, like, expand it. And that's going to be fucking awesome. So I got those on my pull list, too. I'm really excited about that. Bougie, what are your thoughts?
It's pretty exciting. I mean, I think it's going to be awesome. It's going to be, you know, nothing but action. You know, it's going to be great. I mean, I'm sure they'll have, like, a really good story for it and everything. The only thing that concerns me that I hope doesn't happen, even though I'll admit I haven't been, as a kid, liking comics some, I've gotten, like, big into comics just over the past couple months. If you kill someone that's a major character, for the love of God, don't come back the first issue after this is over and tell me they're from, like, the goddamn eighth dimension. That's the worst thing that ever happens in comics. I don't want you to kill Storm and that be, like, the big emotional end to it, is that Storm had to die for them to settle things, and then the very next issue of Uncanny X-Men be like, nah, she didn't die. It was a fake Storm. It was a hologram of Storm. And then when you go back and read it, you find out, oh, it's Storm hologram the whole time.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Just don't do that.
Rufus, your comments on this first before I, but don't lose that thought on deaths in comics. That's coming up.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, deaths in comics. They do me nothing. I don't know, you know, it's like superheroes fighting against superheroes, you know, what fanboy dream does that not make? You know, that's the... I could see it being, like, really gratuitous, but it would probably just be in, like, all the best ways. So, you know, yeah, it was really, 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 be really neat. Because I don't think they've never done it other than they did in the Ultimates, you know, in the Ultimate Universe. They did the Ultimate War.
The Civil War, you know, was, like Civil War was between the two factions, but it was mainly, like, the Avengers themselves. But it was, like, Cap's guys and Iron Man's guys. So, like, this is, you know, the Avengers as you know them. And love them with the movie coming out, and the X-Men, as you know them and love them mostly, let's have the Wolverine question, so yeah.
Right, yeah, that's what I meant. You know, yeah, Civil War, you know, it was a little bit of everybody versus everybody. You know, it was like there was even villains on certain sides and stuff. So, you know, this, yeah, it's like these two brands, you know, the X-Men and the Avengers. That's really sweet.
Yeah, I think even, like I said, there is, like, the danger that some of it might just be a bunch of gratuitous fighting, but... Because so many of the books are tying into it, like, you should at least get, like, a couple of, like, good stories every month. I mean, the main book, The Avengers versus X-Men, you know, who knows, like, which way it's going to turn, but at the same time, you know, you have, like, three or four X-Men, you know, themed books that are going to be in it, like, a couple of Avengers, like, every single one of those, like, titles is going to be tied in, you know, to it, so the individual books that you already like are probably going to be still mostly story and how they go into it, so... At least some of it. I mean, it'll be like everything. I mean, you know, realistically, it's not going to all be great. There's not going to be like 10 books that tie in each month, all 10 titles are like really awesome, because that's just not going to happen. But there should be some, like, you know, the ones that are already good are probably going to have really good stories in this too.
Yeah, that would be my estimation. I know you mentioned the X-Men titles and Avengers and New Avengers, as well as Avengers, Young Avengers, or whatever that other Secret Avengers, all those titles. going to be tying in. So that's going to be really cool. I am looking forward to the Ultimate Superhero Smackdown there. One thing I want to talk to you before we delve out of comic book news, I know we're going to do a little discussion on action figures for a moment here, and then we'll come back after some music with the TV Casualty and wrap up the show there. We'll be here with you for a few more minutes. But we talked about the deaths in comics. You know, you talked about how this is a huge event and very probable will lead to the death of a major character. They've not said anything about that. That's generally the implication of an event this big. A lot of people kind of felt ripped off with Fear itself because they, you know, sold like Thor and Bucky were killed, and neither one of them were killed, you know. But you know, they were able to spin off like Bucky into Winter Soldier, which was cool. But, you know, it was still... They go back to deaths in comics. Captain America was one, for me, most poignant deaths, you know. Like, they really did a good job with the whole media hype around his death and the story they told leading up to it and how shocking it was. And then they made you care about Bucky, who was brainwashed as a CIA Soviet spy who was fucking killing people, you know, in a Cold War for the other team, and was the ultimate enemy of Steve Rogers and didn't even know it because the Soviets found his body and gave him the Russian super soldier serum, made him the Winter Soldier. And then Steve Rogers gets in the Cosmic Cube, and he's redeemed, and he remembers that he's Bucky, and so, like, he's just trying to find his way. He's so lost. Steve's guiding him, you know. Steve is his fucking guiding light. And then Steve gets off, and Bucky's all alone, and it's Iron Man and Nick Fury that convince Bucky to take up the mantle of Captain America. And then you had, like, a year's worth of great stories with Bucky as Captain America. And then, of course, movie's coming out. Got to have Captain America out there, so they want Steve Rogers back in the suit. They bring Steve Rogers back from the dead and was probably the worst part of Ed Brubaker's otherwise legendary run on Captain America. And then even when they bring him back from the dead, he's going to be like, well, the Nick Fury spot. He's going to be the leader of S.H.I.E.L.D. Bucky's still going to be Captain America. Well, it was only a matter of time where they had to kill off Bucky and put Cap back in the suit because of the movies, you know. And that's the, it's because it's tied to a marketing machine. Unfortunately, you can't prevent some things like that, but it's still like it does take away the effectiveness of that as a tool in storytelling, you know, when because that death touched me reading that stuff, and, you know, it was just kind of handled haphazardly, like, oh, he's back. Yeah, he was just lost in time, just kidding, you know.
Didn't they kill Bucky off again?
Yeah, but he's back again.
Hey, they killed Bucky again. He's back again. Well, that just shows you, you know, the ultimate lack of shit that is dying in a comic book.
The only way I think dying in a comic works, I mean, you just can't, you know, it's like you got to treat the fans, you know, like they're not idiots, like they know something, you know. And even if it's done well, like, I haven't read, but I've heard that, like, Dick Grayson taking over for Bruce Wayne at, like, the end of Detective Comics was, like, really well done. But don't try to fool me. Don't lie to me. Bruce Wayne's not dead. You're not going to write comics for the next 20 years with no Bruce Wayne. You're not going to do, like, Spider-Man now. There's, you know, in the Ultimates, you know, Spider-Man dies, and some other kid is Spider-Man. That just happens to also have spider powers, of course, which always gets me when somebody just happens to have the power. Like, oh no, somebody else got the spider power. They're just hanging around. But you can't fool me. Peter Parker's Spider-Man. You can't tell me that in 3 years that Peter Parker is not going to be Spider-Man again. Like, there's, you know, you. I think they're killer. They're like characters that can be created for the purpose of getting that sidekick stuff like that. Certain characters, if they die, you know, and they just aren't going to come back, that's okay. But there's never going to be a point where, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, that you can have them die and replace them, you know, it's just kind of a slap in the face because you're just like, well, I wonder how long is it going to take before this person's back alive because they're just always going to be alive. Well, whether deaths are going to work or if it's a character where, for a big character, you know, at least hold it out for a while. Hold it out for like 10 years, you know. There's been a billion of certain characters. And the only way it's worked is if it was, like, a really long time before the person was back. Or if you do it in, like, some sort of, like, a one-shot or a graphic novel. If you want to write, like, a side story type thing that's not with the thing, then that can be effective. Where you're telling, like, a, you know, kind of, like, outside of the regular little universe, you know, and they die. Then I can be okay with that, but not, I'm just reading Batman Monthly, you know, if all of a sudden you're like, Bruce Wayne's dead. Now, you know, so-and-so's Batman. We'll be like, well, dude, I know he's coming back. I know he's coming back.
Dude, you're such a comic book noob. It's called, whether it's part of the canon storyline or not, is what you refer to it as. So they would write something that would be outside of the canon. You have to know the jargon. If you're gonna roll with the big dogs, Moose, you gotta know the jargon.
Well, thank you for being a pretentious comic book douche.
So, there you have it, discussion on comic books, comic book news from the Super Geek Roundtable live at the compound. This is a brief discussion on action figures just while we're on comic books. A lot of great action figures out there if you're into that sort of thing. That's another geek fetish on an entirely another level. If you're that into action figures, it really just depends. You know, there's some people like the toy man at the flea market who's like, you know, that guy's like fucking doing some disturbing things with his toys behind closed doors. But regardless, I love my toys as well. You know, I'm over 30 and still buying the shit out of them, and Rufus is even worse than me. But what I'm really into right now is the Marvel 3.5-inch figures.
Marvel Universe
3.5-inch figures that...
3 3/4 inch, Dan.
Oh, I'm sorry. 3 3/4 inch. I didn't get out my ruler. As I said, Rufus is very serious about his... It's a G.I. Joe size figures, you know. But, man, they're just scaled. They got everybody you could want. A little on the pricey side, but if you shop online or have inside reads, if you got a guy, like we got a guy, who perfectly 100% legal means, might I add, but we got a guy that we get him on the download. But if you're not a celebrity like myself, then you can go to the store and pay a little bit more, but they're still very much worth it. It's highly detailed and articulated for such small figures. Man, I'm rocking. I got a Dr. Doom. I got the Red Skull. I got the Green Goblin, Absorbing Man, Dr. Strange, Bucky Cap, Regular Cap, Iron Man, Thor, the Wasp, the Hulk, Movie Cap, the Winter Soldier. I got Cable. I got Wolverine. I got Apocalypse, Deadpool, Namor, Cyclops, Wolverine. I said Wolverine, Iceman, Havoc. And it's just going to keep getting worse. Rufus, what do you got to say?
Please don't name yourself. Every Marvel Universe you got, son, I got +100, +100. Let's see, I also collect. Let me, Mooj, trying to grab the mic. I'm going to go through all the figs I collect and I'm going to name. And actually, let me drive to my house real quick so I can look at all of them so that I can name them all for all of you right now. But no, the Marvel Universe is all really, really badass. I just started collecting those new Star Wars toys because I'm a horrid addict with no self-control. Our dude you're talking about, he said, oh, Star Wars figs, right? I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm already collecting so many figs. You know, I collected WWE Mattel Legends, which are just the most epic wrestling figs of all time. Anybody out there that likes Legends, if you collected the Jax Classics, sell all of those and buy this collection. These are all so much better. They just have such sweet accessories and accessories really can make some figs.
Don't lose
the accessories. You gotta, if you're selling me a lot online on fucking eBay, I mean, every one of them motherfuckers better have their accessories or you're getting negative feedback immediately. But I got these the WWE Legends. I like to do the Jax UFC figs because I'm a UFC geek. I like that. Let's see, you got the Walking Dead figs. But so I'm telling the toy guy, you know, I'm like, man, yeah, you know, oh, you got the new, oh, yeah, those new Star Wars figs, you know. I see them in the stores. I've been seeing them in the stores the last couple of years. I really want them, but, you know, and he's like, oh, new Star Wars figs. You want those, huh? And it's like, no toy guy, no. And he's like, well, then don't look under this box. Well, then don't look under this box. You piece of shit. You know, it's like you're the biggest fucking drug dealer there ever was. You know, it's like, well, do, you know, the... take a little hit, you know. It's like having to look at this guy's fucking back of his SUV just piled up with toys, and I see all these fucking every quintessential Star Wars toy you can want. So of course, you know, he tells me he's gonna give it to me on credit as well. He says, shit,
yeah.
Piece of shit.
He's gonna ask everybody to do a favor one day. One day you're just gonna be sitting around and you're gonna ask for a favor.
We're gonna have to kill a bitch. We're gonna have to kill a bitch for all these figs, man. But yeah, figs are great, man. That's our fig group. God hates figs.
Yes, God hates figs. That's it. I'd like to point out that unless you have a fig guy, don't try to fuck with us on action figure buys because we have a fit guy. Everybody's 30 or almost 30, within 2 years of 30. And yes, we have a dude who's basically, you know, he's our friend, kind of, but his main purpose, now you're our friend if you listen, but his number one thing is that he gets us figs. And he does, he's got, gets UFC figs, just talking to figs I like. The Marvel Universe figures are awesome, but I'm a bit of a weirdo in that I want all of my figs to be like 6 inches. So I like my UFC figs. I would be totally down to get some like Marvel Legends because they're that size. But I could get into that because, like you said, he is the crack dealer. And I mentioned that I love the movie Indiana Jones, and he said, oh, I can get Indiana Jones figs. I said, don't. Don't bother with it. And if he has them the next time I see him, I will buy them all. I will buy them all, especially all of them.
Except for the fact that you're now going to be cut off. Big man heard what you said, Mooch. You cut off from the figs. He's already texted me. His fucking tan ass said to tell Mooch, fuck him and some figs. He can't. He's gonna give me all the figs he would have sold you. He's gonna give them to me for free. And two, somebody has to bring up that you like them to be 6 inches at least, which goes hand in hand perfectly with Dan calling figs a fetish. I don't know what you two guys. Figs aren't a fetish for me. It's an extreme hobby. There's no fetish involved. Six inch or nothing, Mooch. 6 inch or get the fuck out, Mooch says. You know, right? You know? 6 inch or get the fuck out of my butthole.
Here's the problem. I don't put them in my butthole. Is that I got all these other figs. I got wrestling figs of 6 inches. UFC. What the fuck if I buy 3 3/4 Captain America? He can't fucking fight Anderson Silva. I'm just done. It can't happen. So why would I want that? Why would you want to be sitting there tempted like, oh, man, it would really be cool if Spider-Man could fucking fight against Hulk Hogan? Well, if you get the 6-inch Spider-Man, he fucking can. So that's why. Because everybody knows, everyone who has these figs like to cross-pollinate their genres and have them fight each other. You know you do.
Dude, you're trying to hate on the figs that are less than 6 inches, dude. Look at, like, some of the best fig lines of all time, man. You're talking about G.I. Joes. I ain't talking about the 12 inches. I'm talking about the 3 3/4 inch G.I. Joes. 4-inch Hasbros, son? The WWF Hasbros, son? And the WCW Galoobs? Galoobs? No, you're not getting it back. Not getting it back until you admit that you love all these figs and that you own Galoobs. You own all the Galoobs.
Every single one of them.
And they ain't 6 inches. How do they appease your need,
okay,
Mooch? How are you getting off on these 4-inch Galoobs?
They don't make the shelf. That's it. They're in a box. They don't get on the shelf for the other figs that are that size.
That's a fucking shame, Mooch.
Hey, man, I'm not hating on them. I'm just saying I've chosen one. If I didn't have any, maybe I would just go with 3 3/4. And before a couple of years ago, mind you, before Marvel Universe came out, they were really sleeping on those. There weren't any cool 3 3/4 inch figs like 3 years ago. There wasn't any. It's a new thing. I mean, the toy people are smart now. They make all of them that size so they can all play with each other. But that's it.
It's reemergence?
Yes, and it's a massive universe to scale. Let me just say this. There is a giant fucking Galactus that is to scale with these 3 3/4 inch figures. It's like, you know, a couple feet tall or whatever. It's fucking huge. There's a Sentinel. I mean, how fucking badass is that? I mean, come on. There's no way. But in any event, that's... The inmates are taking control of the asylum here. We're having a great time on the Midnight Black Mass.
Batman Legacy is the best.
And Muji says the Batman Legacy figures. 6 inches or none. Any final thoughts on figs? You guys have had a hell of a discussion here. I've just said my brief piece, but you guys are certainly welcome to have a final thought on this.
I've never put a fig in my butt. That's it.
And for anybody out there that is into the Marvel Universe like we are, got the tip the other day. If you got the Sentinel, I know I got a Sentinel. I bought one of the Sentinel figs. But obviously, I'm an opener. I'm a fig opener. I like to open my figs, set up little battle scenes and sequences. And obviously, the end game on this would be some glorious fig room in my future. I'm not there yet, living in my two-room apartment with a roommate, obviously. Don't have a fig room. But hopefully one day there will be a fig room with epic Marvel battles lining the walls. But, those Sentinel figs, which used to be like fucking like $50, obviously
We didn't get over $50 because we cool, we got the guy. But now, them shits are apparently coming on sale at Walmart for $25, which means I'm going to buy me two more Sentinels because no, you never saw a lone Sentinel. There's always three. There's always three or four Sentinels. You know what I'm saying? So that's a little tip out there, guys. Go get you a $25 Sentinel. It's a good deal. If you don't have one already, you're a fucking complete piece of shit if you don't go buy one for $25.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. You only have one Sentinel. What if all your X-Men kill it? Party's over.
Yeah, and, you know, you have, like, Hand Ninjas and Hydra and AIM agents. Like, you can just get so many unlimited numbers of those and have hordes. Yeah, it sucks. It's really pathetic how much we love dolls here, but...
not dolls, dude.
That's right. They're not dolls. They are action figures.
They're not dolls until you can take all of their clothes off, and that, at which point they become dolls.
And there you go. All right, fans. Well, that's it for another edition of the Super Geek Roundtable. We're going to go to some more tunes briefly. Got a little Lynyrd Skynyrd lined up for you. Then want to come back with TV Casualty and send you off on your merry way. This is Lynyrd Skynyrd off of the classic pronounced Lynyrd Skynyrd album. This is a song by the government. This is a song called Things Going On.
Have you ever fell down when blow?
the Joker again was defeated and sent back to Arkham, but you know he's going to reign again because they have the shittiest security of all time at Arkham Asylum, apparently. Next week, we'll be back with another edition of TV Casualty, and we will be introduced for the first time, or have we, to one of the most famous villains in all of Batman lore. We'll see two sides of the coin as we take a look at Two-Face and the transformation of Harvey Dent in Two-Face Part 1 next week on TV Casualty here on the Midnight Black Mass. Been a great show. Didn't have any one particular special guest, but we came back with a nice Super Geek Roundtable for the second show in a row here and had a lot of entertaining discussion with Devil's Reject Rufus Black and Muji of the Muji Movie Minute. Want to thank you for joining us, fans. We're going to leave you with New Orleans, Louisiana's Down. This song's called New Orleans is a Dying Whore. We'll see you next week, folks. Keep one foot in the gutter and one fist in the goal. Whoa, yeah.